Cooking Mic Te Awkward Talks. My name is Izzy.
And I'm Kay, and we're two musicians from Wellington, Aotearoa, here to discuss what really goes on in the New Zealand music industry.
That's right, each week we host open and awkward conversations with musicians, producers, technicians, and other well-known practitioners in the industry.
This podcast is about creating a safe space to help each other out and call each other out. No topic is too awkward.
Welcome to Awkward Talks. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Awkward Talks podcast. This is Izzy, and I am here with Kay. Hey, doll.
Kia ora.
How's it going?
Very good.
Good. And we are also joined by, at this point, our honorary Awkward Talks member, aka Mel, aka the Shapra from Soundcheck. Welcome, Mel.
Kia ora, both of you.
How's it going?
And all the listeners, I should say.
Yes, and everyone that is joining us.
I'm great, thank you. Thank you for inviting me here.
No. Thank you for being here.
All right, well, Mel, no my hoki mai ki te awkward talks at Opu. Izzy and I have had the pleasure of meeting and working with you twice now, so we already feel very warm and excited for this episode. How are you feeling about your first podcast?
It's very exciting, partly because I've listened to every single episode and now I find myself here. Like, how did that happen? And I guess that the nervousness part is because, as someone was saying to me last week, something that they enjoy about my way of talking is that they said I flit. I flit from one thing to another, back again. And I was thinking, how will flitting translate into a podcast? However, there are editors.
Shout and out to
flitting,
Robbie.
Flitting is good. It's authentic. That's what we like. We like our authentic selves on this podcast. But we should also address the big elephant in the room, which is that I actually don't know which cameras I'm looking at, but you guys can see us. Oh, hi. But the wonderful team at Matrix has offered to fully record us both in audio and in film. So thank you guys for having us. And it's really great to not see you all, but apparently that's what the people in front of the camera say. So if you're only just listening in, make sure you head over to our YouTube to find the full video. Grab a cup of tea, sit down, relax, or if you're on a walk in the car, maybe don't be watching a YouTube video in the car. Let's get into the conversation. Mel, you like to set up conversations in a really lovely way when you do workshops, and you've done it before with us too in-person workshops. Do you want to maybe take us through a little bit of an opening, if you will, of one of these combos?
Yeah, for sure. Thank you. So I guess one thing that I know from doing the work I do, like if I say what Shapra means, for example, I'll say the words. Sexual harm prevention and response advisor. So even the job title, when I say it to people, like say when I'm meeting people like socially, professionally, I can see a change almost or like a something come over people's faces sometimes just because they're not necessarily expecting or used to or hearing a word with like sexual anything in a sentence. So I just think it's always just really, really important wherever I am doing my work or talking about my work with people, having conversations and communities, organisations, individuals, anyone, is like that people have to feel okay to have the conversation. That I believe having the conversation is really important, but there's no point in having it if the person or people are just so uncomfortable or aren't feeling safe for what could be a whole bunch of reasons. And so therefore, like when I met with the two of you a couple of weeks ago and I brought in the fidgety toys.
Oh, that was so good.
And everyone gets yourself a fidget spinner and a shimming pack.
and some kai. And then when we talked about how we start and like do the two of you have a way that you normally start? So in some groups that might be karakia. But there's also like what is it that people need to be here? And one of the things for me, like in a workshop, is that people need to know that they're not like stuck to their seat. They can get up and go, whether it's outside, just move down the hall. I mean, our workshops, we have Play-Doh on the tables. We have Post-its. People make cranes. Like, because some people actually sitting still even, like let alone the content, is already a thing. So just want to really acknowledge all of that, and if you're listening to this now and wondering, like, you know, where it's going to go today, like, I guess the one of the beauties of a podcast is that you can press pause, or you can move away, or you can stare at the sea or the bush, or the go and get another cup of tea, or just whatever it is that means that you're okay as you're listening.
Oh, kia ora. All right, well, on that note, temata, let's open up this kōrero.
Beautiful.
Okay, so before we get into the main topic of this episode, we need to know, Mel. You've obviously said, what is the chakra, but who is Mel? Can we have a background as to who you are, the person and the profession?
Certainly, certainly. So I was born and grew up and now live in Te Whanganui a Tara, so I have lived in other places but came back and have been living for a number of years on a hill overlooking Lyell Bay.
Beautiful.
Lovely.
I just, because the number of places I've lived in my life which have been, you know, damp, looking out onto a car park, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep, you're speaking to our demographic.
Okay. So, and not only am I living on a hill, but it's a hill, it's just down a little bit. So I have the view, but it's sheltered, so there's not so much wind.
Gorgeous.
So to me, I've been there for years now, and I don't know that there's a single day goes by that I don't walk past, down the, you know, into the house and past the view and just go, this is pretty awesome. So that's where I'm currently living. Even though I was in my early 30s before I had my son, whose name is Rore. He's a, also, by the way, he is a hip-hop dancer, choreographer, Rore_Rutenle on Instagram.
Shout out, everyone, go follow.
Shout out, Rore.
And so even though, you know, there's a fair bit of life I'd already had by the time I had Rore, I think I just am already bringing him in to the conversation because, because of how much I love him, because of how much I've learned, how much I continue to learn. You know, like we talked about this podcast and he told me I was over-preparing and he just has this way of saying, Mum. Like, as in, chill. And anyway, and so Rore, he's now 24, and hip-hop is his thing. And I remember a few years ago, so he was about 16, and he got offered this opportunity to go over to Brisbane and join Lawrence Kaiwai, who was had been in the Palace, for those people out there who know of Paris Goble and the Palace in Tāmaki. Anyway, Rory had this opportunity to go to Brisbane and dance with Lawrence, and it happened that he'd looked up to Lawrence for a few years. And school was not really a thing for Rory, but, you know, kind of because that was the age and that was the thing.
Just what you do. Going through the motions.
And then he said to me, Mum, can I go and live in Brisbane? And it was like, and because he wanted to dance. So I said yes and then went, because this is his dream. And then I went, how does this happen? And what was really interesting is that as a, you know, as the adult, as the parent, that there were only two reactions from people in my life who I talked to about it. One was education. Shouldn't he be finishing school? You know, like, what if he broke his leg? What if he couldn't dance? What if he... There was that reaction really strongly. And then there were those that went, oh, my gosh, that's just so, you know, supportive of you.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, I kind of think, like, your child needs you...
Yeah.
To back them, to believe
support
in them.
Support should be the minimum.
I reckon, and so, that's, I know I've just abbreviated my life into talking about Rore, but.
I love it.
And then a little bit work-wise. So Most of the work I've done in my life has been in agencies where there's been sexual harm happen of mm-hmm. some sort, and then e.g. one's called HELP, which is here in Pōneke, and they are there for any child, young person, adult who's been through some sort of sexual mm-hmm. harm. And then I've also worked in places like WellStop, and they're based physically in the Heart, but they cover a greater region than that. And they're there for children, young people and adults who have actually done the harm to other people. And then, so having worked in small community groups for a long time, in 2016, I took a specialist role. So I was a SAPRA, not a now a SAPRA, a different acronym, yeah. but still, you know, same kind of work,
yeah.
but at the Defence Force. And so I cannot overstate how, what a quantum leap that was yeah. to go from small community organisations to the military.
Yeah.
And it taught me endless amounts. And I think one of the biggest ones was what it is to be within a community or communities and not be a part of it, but be in enough to kind of be able to work within it and realise that then it's so different to kind of be in an agency where people come to you as yes. opposed to be in the yeah. organisational yep. community
integrated.
Itself.
Yeah.
There's a whole bunch of stuff in there. But yeah. anyway, that I learned a lot. And then I became the manager of that team and then left last year. And now I'm the SHAPRA.
The SHAPRA, yeah. We also really like that you're called the SHAPRA. It's very... it's not,
it's like
it's
a
not,
superhero.
Yeah.
Oh, true.
The music industry. It's
the SHAPRA.
The SHAPRA. Yeah. Oh, true. yeah. And for a little while I was talking about the SHAPRA in the third person.
Yeah.
And I thought, what am I doing? Like, that is a little bit weird. But yeah, that... The chaperone. And can I just say one little bit more about the work? Just
yeah. a podcast, yeah, yeah. whatever you want.
Because you know, I can rattle off agencies I've worked at and stuff, but just a something that at one point I noticed in my kind of working life was the very first place I worked at was a place. It was HELP, because I worked at HELP twice at different points of my life, but at HELP the first time where. Working with survivors and sometimes family members. And so that was everything to me, that I didn't think past working with people who had been through some sort of sexual harm.
Mm.
And then fast forward a few years, by now I've had Rore, who's still the baby, and I'm returning into the paid workforce. And I apply for I'm a social worker by now too, so I've done a few things while I've...
Yeah.
And so I applied for a job, which I think I wouldn't have liked. But the manager said, oh, we've got this other job, which is running a specialist kind of family home for teenagers who have done sexual harm. And we think you'd be good at running these homes. And I went, thank you, but no, because I've worked with survivors. I don't want to do this other work.
Mm.
And she said one sentence, which was, but what better prevention is there? And in that moment, standing in my kitchen, I went, ah. And so I applied for that job and got it.
Yeah.
And that's essentially, it was this woman, Diane, who really is responsible for me coming back into the area, because I've been in it ever since. And then the other particularly pivotal time that I just wanted to mention is that a few years after that, after coming back, I came across the work of this place in the UK, Ireland, and parts of the US that's called Stop It Now, and it's a child sexual abuse prevention place. But one of the things in the UK that they've got is a helpline, and it's set up primarily for people who are concerned about their own thoughts and feelings and behaviour.
Mm,
yeah,
wow.
Like, as in doing harm. And when I heard that, I was like, what?
Yeah.
Mm. And people are ringing to actually get help.
Wow.
Before they do something, why don't we also have that here? And also, expanding significantly, because I thought I was already involved in prevention, and I was in some different ways, but it was still around once something awful's already happened, and I will always care deeply about that work. because it's necessary and, yeah, very necessary. And also this idea of preventing something before it happens, like wow, and how do we do more of that?
Yeah, totally.
Because there's some stuff happening already, but how do we do more? So I just wanted to add in.
Yeah, no, thank you. Yeah, it's fantastic to hear about not only your personal background, but also your professional background, because as we all know, the music industry is a very tight-knit community. And yeah, it's fantastic to hear who the Shapra is, you know, because we have been hearing the acronym, the Shapra. But I really, really wanted to highlight that the Shapra is the amazing Mel. And you're so easy to talk to and so incredible to work with. So very grateful and thankful to have you a part of the music community on behalf of. Let's get into what is the Shapra. Can you tell us a bit more about what the Shapra is, how the work fits in the industry as it is right now, and maybe just a little bit about Soundcheck and why it came to be?
Sure, thank you. So I think I'll start with Soundcheck.
Yes.
Because
chronologically.
And so just for people, some people will know already of Soundcheck in early 2020. It was a group of people within music. So I'll say the names. Lydia Jenkin, and Nina Kay, Tane, Tino Rau, Wairere Iti, Teresa Patterson, Joe Oliver, and Nikki Harrop. And so they came into it at different points, but they were an action group that has recently become a charitable trust. And really they were getting together concerned, knowing about some of what they saw happening within music communities. And then there happened to be some research done by Massey called Amplify Aotearoa that wasn't specifically focused on sexual harm. That was looking at challenges that people face within music communities in terms of succeeding. And one of the things that came out in the survey really strongly was that so many people did not feel safe and that was not the same, you know, there was difference across gender, across sexual identity, with some ethnicity as well in the mix. And so, and then also people weren't asked to tell about what was some of the harm that was happening, but they were saying, they were telling it or writing it in the survey. And so then Soundcheck got some money to have some consultation hui. So there were some online, some in person in beginning of 2021. And essentially, I was a small part of facilitating a couple of those, but Rachel Harrison was involved in all of them. And she's also an independent contractor involved in supporting Soundcheck. And the two questions people were asked is, what is the problem?
Yep.
It's not like there's one problem, but what are people seeing and hearing? And because, of course, depending on things like age and gender and role and so many different things, people see and notice different kinds of behaviour or have had certain things happen to them or their friends. And then the second part of it was, and what do you all at this hui think are the solutions? What can be done? And then there was a report written that summed up what people said and came up with some recommendations. And so that's why there was a focus on sexual harm, because there was the thought that if people aren't even feeling safe, then how could you even start anywhere else? In part that. And so a lot of people said at the hui and in the survey that there was nowhere for them to go. And even though, yes, prevention, of course, and creating environments actually where people can be creative and safe and feel included are all important. And also if when the harm has happened, if you've got nowhere to go, then what does that mean? Not just for individuals, but everyone around them and all the communities.
And long term, what does it mean for for those individuals as well as everyone at large?
Yes. Because it's not just a I think for I don't know what you two think, and please tell me if you disagree, but it seems like a lot of the focus has been put over the years on the person harmed or the person who did it, and both those people, yep. there needs to be focus on the right kind of support, et cetera. Only what about everyone else?
Yeah.
Yep. Like the ripple effects or the shockwaves, yep. As they sometimes can be, of course, so profound.
Yeah.
And
yeah, totally. Yeah, no, I agree with that. And more on, yeah, there it's kind of this focus on that portion, but yeah, what about the management or the longevity or the, you know, everything else that goes with it?
Yes.
Yeah,
I agree. The holistic view of what's going on.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. How do you dismantle that from the get-go before?
I actually had, and I think this has kind of answered the question, but I feel like it's worth posing, is I had someone ask me recently, and they are in the music industry, but they said, you know, why do we need someone, you know, there are helplines, there are places to go. Why do we need, you know, someone dedicated in the industry for this space? And I think that's so true, is that it is, you know, some of the things we've already spoken about, how it is a community of its own, and the holistic understanding of that community is so important to the future betterment and not just the case by case dealing with.
Yes.
Would you agree with that?
Yeah, totally. Mm. Yeah, I think that's, because I think it's a good question to ask, eh? Mm. And indeed, I guess people in kind of funding bodies could be saying the same thing to places like Soundcheck and say, well, yeah, there are all these agencies and helplines, et cetera. Mm. But yeah, I think the fact that music communities are so, communities, and it's not 9 to 5.
Yeah,
it's whole of life, whole of identity.
Mm, yeah,
And so therefore, a person isn't just going to leave a job. Not saying it's always easy to leave a job anyway, because financially, etc. Only, you don't leave your creative self.
Yeah,
exactly. And I think trust is also so important, and that I think, like, already, for example, sometimes some people have been able to contact me and say, I heard of you through a person who saw you at the music summit, or heard of you through this person. So the word of mouth is and the maybe the trust or the starting of some trust that comes with that is so needed, because there's so much, I think, that people feel like they're risking potentially by even talking.
Yeah,
totally.
Yeah, well, what you said about creative identity, it is, it's not, it's not like you can take off your business hat 9 to 5 and then go to, you know, go home. It's with you. So, risking it is, I can understand that if it's it's your identity, not just your profession or not just your, you know, craft or hobby. It's you. Yeah.
Particularly, and I think we'll get a little bit more into this later on, but particularly with the power dynamics that we have in the industry can be super problematic when it comes to disrupting the peace, for lack of a better term.
Totally. Totally. And I also think that there's something and it's not only, say, music communities, but I think this could be true for other communities too. For example, maybe some queer communities, for example, where that if harm has happened from within, it's not straightforward to go to the police or to anyone external, because of what that can feel like you're then bringing in to the community. And I wonder if, I'm not saying it's the same, but I wonder if there's something almost similar about going outside of this world that is everything.
Totally. Yeah. And this is really great context to what the Chakra is. If you could sum up the Chakra in like a sales pitch, if you will, how would you present it to someone who's like, what is a Chakra?
Yes. Okay. So a Chakra is there for anyone in any music community, regardless of who they are, who is affected by sexual harm of whatever sort in whatever way. So whether that is because the person has been harmed themselves, mm-hmm. whether mm-hmm. they're the friend of that person, whether they're a person who another person has alleged that our person has done harm,
mm-hmm.
it's not, and it's out there. It's maybe in some sort of social media, for example. Mm. It could be that person coming, their friend. It could be the venue owner, someone working at a festival. So just really trying to emphasize anyone. And also I figure it could be someone coming, not necessarily because directly attached to, say, a person harmed or a person who's done harm, or even, say, a bystander, someone who's, you know, seen or heard something. But it could be people like you two, where the work that you're doing and some of the discussions that you're having kind of, you know, overlap.
Mm.
And so that really, I thought, cool time that we had a couple of weeks ago, just even talking about what that is for you, that fits into the chakra role. And that's not a very short description.
No, that's great.
No, yeah. Really, I'd also just like to reiterate that it was very cool hanging out with you and going well over our hui time, because it was so it was so good and so
great.
So much content, so many takeaways that Izzy and I had.
Totally. I think it's really great. You know, like, I think it's maybe a bit out of the box for people who are who are starting something small or even big within the music industry, to have that mindset of, like, let's be really intentional about what we're doing internally so that we can be really strong externally.
Yeah.
Yes. And although we didn't go, we were quite broad in our conversation that we had with you, I thought it was so helpful just to, like, have someone else on the outside being like, yeah, this is the right direction, or these are the right things to be considering. And so definitely recommend.
Any organization as well, big, small, I would press, because I feel just like Izzy, that this is a part of that prevention, and this is a part of that, or that wider understanding, regardless of your own experience. Everyone should have a level of understanding to know how to navigate those kinds of situations, or to, you know, look out for them, or to be that person for someone, or to, you know, just have those tools. So, yeah, again, shout out to Mel.
Shout out to
the
Mel.
The chakra.
And can I shout out to both of you too?
Shout out to all around.
Yeah, but just because, well, A, for Awkward Talks, and also B, for how you approach it, how open you are. Like, my favorite bit of meeting with you last time was when I wasn't talking at the end, that last kind of half hour or so, and it was like you two were just bouncing off each other and just creating so much and just deciding so much, and it was all like on fire, right? I love the moments like that.
Oh, I'm glad. I was actually quite sorry about that, because I just went on a tangent and was like, no, Izzy, we need to figure this out right now.
Yeah,
I'm confused.
We really, like, locked eyes on each other and we're like, we got to sort this out. You know, right?
We're such palms up.
Yeah.
Like, we always kind of have that thing. So that's really lovely. Thank you, Mel.
Thank you.
Yeah, because that is our dynamic. Yeah. And I think that's why, that's why we're still here. to be honest.
I think that leads very perfectly into our next question.
What services does the chakra provide?
Right. Mm. Yes. Mm. So important to bring that to life, make that very mean something to people. Because if I can say, not that it's not to do with support, only I also think the word support kind of can turn people off. Like, I don't need someone to make me a cup of tea. Or anyway, they can't, they're on the phone. Like, and so words that I think are a little bit more practical or imaginable are, like, to figure something out, or for some guidance or advice, or just because you actually want someone to listen really, really well. And sometimes, even though people often go to friends and family to talk things through, and that's a very important source of support, sometimes also for friends and family, because of that emotional connection, it sometimes can make it challenging to listen really well, whereas there's that's just
yeah
a part of
my no bias. Well,
yeah. So that's not a criticism of friends and family. That's just a kind of a reality,
I think it's
though.
A valid
sometimes,
point.
So sometimes it is like, you know, I might, depending on whether a person's local to me so I can meet in person or they're on a Zoom or a phone call, we might be using a whiteboard, we might be creating a plan, we might be going, okay, what is the next step? Also, because I mentioned Rachel before, so she's a part, some of the work that she's done for Soundcheck includes, she's the prevention specialist. So whereas most of my experience is once something's already happened, more of her work experience is in this idea of prevention. And so people can, if they contact the SHAPRA when necessary, I can either pass through to Rachel or actually just bring both of us in to a call. And so then that, because what I, one of the things I love about many music community people I have met, including both of you, is just how much care and passion and strength and everything there is around the community. And so people are wanting, not when I say everything, like anything they can get.
Hungry, absolutely. They care so much.
So it's even when a person is talking to me about something that's happened to themselves, and the community, it's
one and the same. Yeah, totally. I think that's, we all feel the same thing. And I think we experienced that when we first started Awkward Talks, is that we had like, I mean, I was surprised by the support that we got. And I don't know why, because there's, I feel like, you know, it's specifically in the industry, we have this kind of like collective, quote unquote, intelligence is not quite the right word, but you know, we've got this feeling of things that are happening. And so everyone was kind of feeling a little tense and a little anxious, and when we started Awkward Talks, we got all of the support, and it was like, oh yeah, like people actually do want to make a difference. Like there are so many people out there that want to have these conversations and that want to be a part of it. And to all of you, thank you. But I think we spend so much time focusing on the people who don't want to make the change, or perhaps are having a non-productive conversation, that we forget that there's so many of us that are really rooting for positive change.
Absolutely. Exactly. And that has to be amplified. Because I don't know about you, I've talked to so many people who, you know, they're doing what they can or what they know. Only it's when they're at part of other conversations, like what the two of you are doing, that then they hear something else. And not just talking about the stuff that I, you know, the area that I work in, but all kinds of facets, of music. And then they hear someone give a tip or say something, and it's like, that's also great. I can also do that. Like, we've seen people come out of the workshops that Rachel and I facilitate, and that they're coming in feeling a little bit isolated or by themselves, still connected into all music in all kinds of ways, but in terms of making change, just not sure how that really looks. And then they come out, and often they've like, sometimes people even stay sitting at the table when the workshop is finished, and they're still like almost saying bye to these people that they've shared this thing with.
And then they're
exchanging, you know, details, and the networking that happens in the breaks and the ideas that, anyway. Love it.
For anyone who's sitting out there who's in the industry, they might be a producer, they might be someone who puts on gigs, they might, you know, work in an industry-based organisation. If they're sitting at home and they're going, is the SHAPRA right for me? Like, should I approach them? Is this right for my workplace? How does someone know to get in touch with you? Or how does someone take an inventory and go, this is the right thing for us?
I love that question, because it reminded me of something that's very important to say. One is that I think for some people, they have the idea that maybe that they'd be wasting my time.
Yeah.
Mm.
Because sometimes people just minimize the importance of whatever it is, or the seriousness, or whatever it is that's happened, or that they're kind of asking questions about whatever. So one thing to make crystal clear, no one is wasting my time and at all. And also how I see it is, contact me and ask the question. Because if I'm the wrong person for the question, well, then I will find somebody else for the question.
Yeah.
Like, and because even though I do have this focus because of my work in terms of sexual harm, if someone rings or contacts me about, say, they're experiencing racism, racial harassment, bullying, some other behaviour. So while that's not my, you know, the thing I've spent years and years and years focused on, also all of those harms are absolutely connected. In particular, you know, I think the particular form of harm that is sexual harassment and racism for people of colour, when it's, excuse me, using it kind of such a general term, but yeah, so when, as me, being Pākehā, sexual harassment that I experience is one thing, and a lot of women that I've talked to, be Māori, Chinese, Samoan, that when there's sexual harassment, there's more going on than the gender.
Yeah.
And there's some, I haven't come across any research locally, but I have come across a US study that actually looks at the intersection of ethnicity and gender with harassment and some real differences and some differences anyway in what we're seeing. So first, no one is wasting my time. No such thing as a wrong question. No, and also if people are unsure about it, if someone phones me, and like then I just have a if it's a, you know, cell phone number, then I literally just have a number with no name, and people don't need to say, then I don't need someone's name to talk to them.
Yeah.
So if they're kind of concerned about identifying themselves or identifying somebody else, or just they just don't trust, which is very understandable, then yeah, don't say name. I'm just trying to think if I've covered off anything. Oh, and then the producer, the venue owner, etc. I think if anyone's got like a question of either, oh, I think we're doing all these kinds of things to make this place safer, maybe, and maybe even they're thinking, and to my knowledge, haven't had any incidents recently, or that I know of, or what have you. Still bring the chaperone. Because maybe there's some resources on Soundcheck Aotearoa's site that they hadn't come across, or maybe by talking with Rachel, there's even some, you know, tweaking or some additional stuff that can be done.
Totally.
Yeah.
And one more.
Please. Please, please.
Even if it's something from like years ago, and whether it's happened to the person or it's the person who, regardless of role, regardless of where they are within music, and they're thinking, I still, you know, maybe I did okay. I'm not really sure when I listened to my friend or I listened to my colleague or whoever who was telling me this thing. But actually, I want to contact the chaperone and find out next time if someone tells me something like that again, what does a good response look like, or what does... contact the chaperone. Oh, and can I, sorry, I must, I don't know why I'm apologising for this, but while I'm highlighting the chaperone and, and myself, sorry, again, there I go, talking about
the business, we're here the to chaperone. Have you on the podcast.
Okay.
You're allowed to talk about yourself.
Also, for some people, maybe it is too close. Because, Soundcheck employ me. I don't talk to them about my work and anything other than totally anonymised ways.
Oh, really? As in,
like, you know how, like, if you work for someone, normally you talk about your job with them.
Confidentiality.
No, confidentiality, right. Privacy. Also, though, that may still feel too close to some people. Like, maybe they're friends with someone on Soundcheck, or maybe it just might feel too close. Whatever the concern or the worry, and so I think the importance of people having access and knowing who the external places yep. are, and there are some on the support page of Soundcheck Aotearoa, including Safe to Talk, for example, that's always important.
That's sure. actually really interesting. I just want to point that out really clearly is that so people who go to you, you don't then go and report these issues to Soundcheck. It is completely like a confidential relationship between you and that party.
Yes, yes. And yes. so that it's so only because I realise that it's not in small communities, yeah, small country too.
Yeah.
It's not only names that can identify.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, yes, I could say I've had a number of calls, and they've included calls to do with prevention in music spaces
yep.
or something. Yep. But, you know, something that is so
vague.
Because what Soundcheck here is that the service is being provided.
Yeah.
Should also be clear, it's a free service.
Oh,
It's a very free.
Yes, good point. Yeah. Thank you. I forget to say
so it
that.
Should because... be, yeah, it's accessible. Please know that.
Yes. Yes.
Why do we need a SHAPRA? And furthermore, why, from your perspective as a SHAPRA, why do we have such a long history of harm and misconduct in particularly the New Zealand music industry?
So the why we need a SHAPRA, I think some of it is the many people in music communities said there was nowhere to go.
Yes. Mm. Yeah.
And so from how I see it, no one should have to be on their own dealing right. with sexual harm.
Amen.
And also, choice is is important. So sometimes contacting, say a person does know that rape crisis exists, there might be a reason why that doesn't work for them.
Yep.
So, and it's the same like when there are a small number of kaupapa Māori sexual violence services, for example, and there need to be more because again, there needs to be. Full accessibility and choice. So back to the SHAPRA. So partly at choice, people said there was nowhere to go. I also think that what I'm going to just see if I can say this as clearly as I can. When I worked at HELP, so an agency where people you know contact and then come in primarily, I thought. I did care about the world that people were in. You know, the people that they've told about what's happened, their friends, their family, the issues they're dealing with. Only speaking only for myself, which I guess is all I can do, is I was still just very focused on the person in front of me.
Yeah,
and that seemed to me to be all I needed to be focused on.
Yeah,
and then over time, what I realised is that approach doesn't actually work for some people anyway when they're in community collectivist cultures.
Yeah.
I had a really important feedback experience while I worked at HELP from someone who did talk to me and someone on the crisis team, which I was the team leader for, and they rang someone else and they ended up talking to someone else in HELP who understood things more from a collective culture response and they gave the feedback to that person within HELP that me and the crisis worker that I supervise we did not give them what they needed.
Mm. Right, yeah.
Too focused on them as opposed to the them within. And so I think, and this goes back to what we were saying a little bit about defence and about communities, now how I approach things is every single person I talk to is, and whatever that means, because it means, of course, a bunch of different things for people. Yeah. But it's this—it's the community that we're within. And I'm thinking of a particular person who asked me a question. And what was interesting, person with a music, they asked me a question as the chaperone.
Yeah.
And I went back to my help self and realized, that answer, that's not the answer that they want. There's nothing there. Then I went to defense. And ironically, even though they were a music person, I could answer them more from my defense military experience than I could from my help experience. And it was such a kind of wow moment for me.
Yeah.
Because even though, you know, military communities and music communities aren't necessarily seeing lots in common with each other, perhaps, it's fair to say, it's that what the military do have is identity.
Yeah.
Whole of life, 24/7. Yep. Anyway, so that's a long answer to say.
No,
but
it's
that bit of it too.
Totally. Okay. Thank you. And why do you think we have such a long history of harm? I think we touched on the power dynamic and particularly. Actually, no, I'm not going to say anymore because I would love to hear. Just straight from your perspective as the expert.
Yes. May I also say that we're varying shapes of expert in this room.
Thank you.
Because, Well, actually, when you ask me how I do what I do as a chapra, is, I do it in a very particular way, I guess, but this might sound all kinds of wrong. I often ask lots of questions.
Yeah.
But I always make sure people realize they don't have to answer my questions. but the questions are often because if I don't have a good sense of what's important to a person, then I'm not going to be. I don't know, anything I'm going to say is going to be worthless. It's not because if it was simple. The person wouldn't need to be here. So often in the figuring out, there's just, you know.
A lot to unpack.
And that kind of idea of, like say for example, a person once said to me that they'd seen a counsellor and the counsellor had told them that they needed to, have some exercise. And for this.
Sorry. Yep.
Yeah. And for some people, that advice would be just unhelpful.
Yeah. Don't give me that advice.
Don't
guys.
Give it. Okay, no.
None for
and as it happened, the person who the advice was given to did like it, but they'd taken it literally and gone for a run.
Mm.
And I'm changing this up a little bit so that I'm not identifying people, but. And it just didn't do anything for them. And so then they feel like there's something wrong with them because they kind of.
Right.
And then one day it happened to be really hot. And so they, and at the end of the run, there was a river. So they, jumped in the river. And then they went, this is it. It's the run plus the jumping in the river.
It's their version.
It's their version. And that's what I mean. Mm. So it's like finding out the person's version of what is needed. So back. To the why. So, yes, you have already raised power and the abuse of power because of course, power doesn't have to equal harm all by itself, But, the abuse of power and some of the various factors, e.g. Insecurity of income and contractors and how much it means to get a spot in a, be in a lineup, be, be seen.
Yeah.
How much feels at stake? Anyway, to do with power. Another one really important that will not surprise anyone probably is that when so much alcohol, which is often just a part of the setting where work is happening, and that then sometimes when people do all kinds of bad behaviour to. It's a really general term. So whether it's verbally abusing someone, a physical assault through to sexual harm, often people excuse the behaviour because of the alcohol.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's a really interesting thing, isn't it? Because it's only because we can know that alcohol, affects judgment, it can make us more impulsive or, all those other things. But it's actually, it's the excusing the behaviour is the real problem.
Yeah.
Because if that's happening in an environment, then, well, for a start, it's very unsafe.
Yeah.
So then what it means, the fact that so many, people such as like two of you are in environments where there is lots of alcohol and you're working or you're being expected to work and drink alcohol rather than meet and have a coffee. It's and some of those, not even blurry boundaries sometimes, I think, just no.
just non-existent, actually. Kind of anti-boundaries.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, we talked about the 9-to-5 and how it's not like that and how, you know, our standard, is a bit more, well, is rock and roll. And there is, you know, nightlife involved and there is alcohol and things like that. Is the Shepra like the HR that we've been missing that, you know, we haven't been able to have? Or, you know, the agency and the motives behind it kind of?
Yeah. I think Soundcheck have been always really clear that they want, or actually the music community is also really clear.
Yeah.
They wanted someone that's there for everyone.
Yeah.
Mm. And so some of how the role works, I figure, is that sometimes I can get advice from certain people to then pass on, because yeah, like you say, who's got HR on tap? Unless you work for like an industry body or and so sometimes I can get the advice and around a particular situation and then pass it back to a person or combine it with then what I know, because in certain situations that people are dealing with, it's not going to be just what the Shepra thinks. Say it is going to perhaps be HR advice or some legal advice too. And so figuring out where and how that is best got.
Yeah.
So now I know I'm not HR, but I think that is a part of the picture. Doing?
Yeah, we're doing good. We're doing good. I hope you've been, if you're listening at home, I hope you've taken some moments to take a breath. I know we've been talking about some heavy stuff, but also very hopeful, you know, topics of conversation as well. But now we're moving into what we love to do here at Awkward Talks, which is create tangible things that people can do and implementing in their everyday life, which I think is a huge part of what the Shepra's kaupapa is. It's definitely all about our kaupapa too. So we were thinking about how we wanted to structure this section with Mel, and we sort of realized, well, this is all about kōrero. This is all about conversation and being called Awkward Talks. We thought, how to have an awkward talk.
101.
Because we're all, all about actionable steps here.
Oh, yeah. And like you said, it aligns with our kaupapa. We are Awkward Talks. We are going to learn how to have that awkward talk, because as we've discussed, being frank and vulnerable, kanohi ki te kanohi, is one of the hardest things to do with anyone, let alone someone close to you, and having those kind of frank conversations. And, you know, and I've, you know, seen people and who don't feel empowered to be able to speak up or talk to their mates about what's going on with them or anything at large, you know, having confronting conversations with someone. So let's get into it. What is an awkward talk?
All about an awkward talk. I think, I mean, we have awkward talks here on the podcast, but they haven't been that awkward so far. But I think an example of an awkward talk would be, as you said, like reaching out to someone who, to maybe share something that's happened in your life. Maybe reaching out to Mel could feel like a bit of an awkward talk. Maybe someone has crossed your boundaries and in the moment you want to address it, that's a bit of an awkward talk. Or someone's crossed your boundaries and 2 weeks later you've gone, actually, it's still on my mind and I need to talk to someone about that. That could be an awkward talk.
Or even, you know, someone, you can see someone isn't feeling all right and it's awkward to try and bring it up with them.
But I think the first thing, Mel, I want to ask you is, how do you break down that fear? Because I think that's what stops people first, right? Is they go, oh, I want to have this conversation, or I want to bring up this point with my friend, or tell this person that I didn't like how they treated me. It's like, oh, but what are they going to think about me?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
How do I say the right thing? What is the right thing to say?
Yeah.
How do you get over that first fear of actually having the conversation?
So let's say someone is talking to me with that very question, like something's happened and they want to be able to talk, but either, yeah, like exactly like you say, like this, they're worried about making it weird, getting it wrong somehow, just, yeah. So I like to start with like the person's why. Like, because otherwise what can happen is it can just go round and round in someone's head. That happened, oh, I should, but, you know, like an internal battle, a
conflict,
dialogue, a conflict inside. So if a person knows why they want to, like say, for example, I want to be that person who's able to because actually I care about my friend and I don't want them being in another setting where if they do that again, something really bad could happen. But whatever it is, a person's why, which I think can be, you know, of course, so many things. Because if someone knows their why, then from there, that's what they're kind of standing on going forward.
Be confident in that.
And if I give just a tiny, in terms of in my head example, and it was a situation where I was in a kind of a large public area, and this is not to do with sexual harm, where I was with a group of, there were actually four of us who were Pākehā, one person Samoan Palangi, and then someone came along into the public setting, and one of our group knew this person. And so it was kind of then introducing all around. And this person sat down and we were just chatting a little bit. And then the new person to the group asked the person who identifies as Samoan Palangi, where are you from? They did not ask any of us white, not just presenting, but Pākehā people there. They didn't ask that question. And to my, I don't feel good about this, I didn't say anything. I noticed it and I thought, what does that mean for this person? And then I didn't, because I was concerned about doing something wrong and making it somehow worse for this person, in this case, who, you know, Samoan Palangi. And so anyway, if I come back to my why, and if I'd been talking to myself, it's like, well, okay, you might get it wrong. Or like it might not be a response that is welcomed. However, what is going to happen if you say nothing? So, and if I was talking to myself, if I say nothing, then what it could look like is that this person has just been isolated and stands out from the rest of us, and the rest of us are all not even perhaps noted, for all they know, that we don't even notice, or we don't care, or we, and I think there's, that could happen in a whole bunch of different settings with different things. So anyway, so for me, I hate the thought of someone thinking I don't care or it doesn't matter. So now I've worked out that for myself, that's what I've used to kind of trump, so to speak, the fear of getting it wrong. I'd rather get it wrong and say something than get it wrong and be silent.
That's a really big, a really big one. Getting over the fear, and no matter what stance you are in, because it ripples exponentially, doesn't it? When you're silent.
Totally, and I think if I could actually add on to that as well, is I found not only is the why really helpful, because particularly in that setting, you really tap into your empathy, which can be like super powerful. But the other thing is, like, if I have a bone to pick with someone, even if it's like with my partner, then I'll think in my head, I'm going like, okay, what do I want from this conversation? Like, how can I make this like productive? And if it's if it's something like, you know, in that situation, if you go, I'm just trying to think on the top of my head, but if you go like, I want this person to feel included, or yes. I want to learn how to have this conversation. Mm-hmm. And even if that's through making a mistake and then being told, then that's better than not knowing and then having this come up in future and going through that same conflict again.
Exactly.
So yeah, also knowing what you may want to get from the conversation can also be really like empowering and build confidence.
Yeah, 100%.
That's a good one. So the fear, not getting over the fear, but pushing through the fear and seeing how much good it can do or how much, you know, benefit there is. What you said as well, Izzy.
Yeah. What you want to get out of things. Yeah, what you may want to get out of the conversation.
Mm. Yeah. What other kind of fundamentals are there for having uncomfortable conversations?
No. Yeah, I reckon it's often some words, or words full stop, but also particularly words to start.
Yes.
Because I think the starting is the hardest often. And also, like, when I say words, I think especially often when we're talking all kinds of, not just sexual harm, actually, when we're talking all things like sexual health, sexual identity, sexual pleasure, where would many, not awkward for everyone, but often awkward for people.
Taboo.
Yeah. so then how do I start, what literally, like this, I do this for myself as well as when I'm talking with people, like the first few words to start the sentence, to start the conversation. And another one, I think, along with the starting using the words or starting having some words to start, is I think it is important to be breathing.
Mm.
And I say that kind of mockingly, but I remind myself all the time just because it's so easy to not properly. Yep.
As soon as you said that, I realised I'd been holding my breath for a really long time. Yes, it was nice.
everyone listening, take a minute just to breathe.
Just to breathe.
Take a little breath, everyone.
Yeah. Mm. Because I'm not sure everyone's not like this, but if I feel strongly about something, which therefore means that I maybe have some strong, some strong feelings and some emotions, then if I add into the mix not breathing properly, then I'm probably going to come out not in a way that I even want to.
Like almost explosive, I would say. Yeah.
And I figure in some situations, even if it's kind of I'm in the right, so to speak, like actually that person just touched me, I didn't want it, like, if I'm explosive, well then so what? But I may not feel good about that because I didn't feel kind of in control of my own.
Yeah.
And Okay. It
makes sense. Mm. That leads perfectly into this question, actually. How do you tell a mate that you don't like the way they behave towards you or someone else? So in this situation, like Kay and I could do a little role play or could you give us like some phrases to say, like, you know, you were saying having some words to open the conversation.
Mm.
Give us some, some scenarios.
Yeah. One thought just before, but I do like that idea of going back into some words. Is one of the things that I reckon is because I don't consider myself, who is a natural in this space? Oh, I have met some people who seem to more easily be able to have quite direct, upfront conversations well. Yeah. Mm. So shout out Nina Kay, who I mentioned before. Mm. And because what I've noticed when she does it, is that she is calm, clear, and she's she's stating what the issue is and listening, and also focused on behaviour and what's not okay, while still recognising there's a person there.
Mm.
Yeah, a person, and so there's a person, and so therefore there's dignity or there's to uphold.
Yeah.
However, there's behaviour that's not okay.
Mm.
And so sometimes in this kind of area, I think of people just very deliberately or how I know like that to kind of go, embody it.
We're all embodying.
I did that. Yeah. But okay. So to you two.
Yes.
So the setting is, imagine that one of you has said something that's a little bit off, or is it, what would it be though between the two of you?
Well, okay.
Wait, can I readjust? I'm just going to readjust myself, guys, so that I can look at Kay.
Okay.
So I'm just going to move the microphone so that I can see.
Just for context, the way that we get ready, or at least in this episode,
yes.
We hang out for a bit before the episode and just kind of have a bit of flying banter. And sometimes that doesn't go according to plan. Sometimes it's a hit. Sometimes it's a near miss. Sometimes it's a burn the house down. We might need to go to our therapist and talk about it later.
Oh, we will.
Damage that's been done. So those are kind of the things that, you know.
Well, okay. I think a working relationship is a big thing, right?
Yes.
So, and a lot of people in the music industry work with their mates. Like, you might have a friend that manages you as an artist, or you may, you know, be in a band with a bunch of people, and communication is a really big thing. Kay and I are two very different people, and we operate in two very different ways. So, for example, we, like, will have a situation where what situation should I use? Should I use you're messaging me this morning?
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
okay.
Perfect.
So last week, I set out all the social media plan for Awkward Talks for, like, over this next week. And I put it in, like, our ear table, which is, like, our system and you're familiar with. And it has, like, all the dates in it. I even, like, put all the content in there so that she could see it, because it was a bit of a crossover, because we released the meditation with Toby Lloyd, and it was an extra offering. So anyway, so I put everything into the ear table, and I wanted to double check it was correct before I scheduled it all. So I sent a message to Kay, and I was like, hey, can you please go on the ear table and, like, cross-reference this with your notes and just make sure that I'm doing this correctly so I can go ahead and get this work done. Kay comes back to me and she goes, yep, looks all good. And I was like, cool. Well,
you know what? It did look all good.
It did. Yeah, it did. Sure. And then I get a message from her this morning, and she goes, were you supposed to post that reel? And so for me, my immediate thing was like, I told you to look at the ear table. Like, what do you mean? I can't, you know. So there's that friction of, like, of miscommunication, which is totally cool because we've spoken about it.
Yeah.
But in that example, maybe, like, I don't know, how would I approach Kay and say, you know, because when I got the message this morning, it made me feel really stressed out. I was like, oh my gosh, have I done something wrong? You know, have I messed this up? I really thought I was doing a good job. Yeah. So in that situation, how would I go to Kay and be like, hey, the way that we went about this made me feel this way.
Yeah, yeah.
How would I say that?
Yeah, because in you know, if you Google having, and I know because I did just to see what it said, and it's this idea of, you know, I statements and talking about how I feel, and
and
great if that works for people. And it's not that I disagree with either of those things. I just think there's something about speaking in words that make sense for the two of you.
Yeah.
Can I jump on that?
Oh, please.
Because
like we dealt with it well.
Yeah, no, but it's more when you just reread my message to you, the voice you had for the way that it came to you wasn't was exactly what you felt. And it's interesting. So now I want to know, you haven't even finished your answer, but how do I relay something that I'm confused about to her so she doesn't even get that?
Nice.
Get that message.
Yeah, okay,
like
maybe
that.
I was like,
hey, why is this it? Like, I was like, I'm confused. I don't think it's supposed to be that. But you're like, is this it? Why? And so that's a really interesting one too.
Yeah.
But maybe we should just go to therapy for this.
And was that all happening by text?
Yeah, it was written.
Yeah, because is that part of the issue?
Yes.
Mm, yeah. Well, because, yes. I mean, yeah, if I'd seen her in the morning, I'd be like, hey, is it supposed to be this one?
Like if you rang me and I heard your voice and I'd be like, Kay, look at the air table, damn it.
Yeah, and I'd be like, oh, what? Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, yeah.
Cool. But yes, so like social media, I think, and also messaging can be a big issue in that.
Yeah.
But I'm interested to hear what you said before before you interrupted. But you were talking about how you Googled how to have an hard conversation, and they were saying, what's the I feel and things like that.
Yeah, and I guess, and I was interested in reading it. I wasn't like, I was going to come into this podcast and tell and say what actually Google told me. But although I just have, but it was more, I was just interested. What is the, what kind of messaging is out there? Because I guess I was thinking, what am I having an issue with about that? And I think it's because I just don't relate to that.
Yeah.
I think it kind of can get people into thinking this has to be done in a particular order or said in a particular way.
Totally. Yeah.
And as soon as we start doing that.
That's professional. It's too formal.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. And so, so then I think something a little bit less, sounding like a script is like, but tell me though, with this situation, is it possible to leave voice messages rather than do the written when?
Yes. Yeah.
Just in case that also does prevents some of the.
This could be our new thing because, I mean, Izzy already does that when you can't be bothered typing.
Yeah, I voice message because I get like typing fatigue and I can't do it. So I send Kay like minute long voice messages and then she goes, yep. Cool. Sweet.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I might have to go back and forth because I do like my short form.
Yeah, very concise. Yeah. Totally.
Also don't like saying my voice. Yeah, suggestion. I'm not a singer.
Can I tell another story and then come back to the two of you?
We can bypass that.
One of the things I'm thinking about is, you know, I've mentioned Rachel before. So Rachel and me do lots of work, the facilitation of the workshops plus various other sorts of work together, not just with music, with other, you know, communities, industries too. Anyway, one of the things that we do is we figure we have to keep our relationship strong.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, especially when you're facilitating together, especially when you're doing a podcast together, right? Mm-hmm. So therefore, and I know this is one of the things I was talking to you about when we met a couple of weeks ago, that's why then we have this thing that Rachel calls a whiffle, what I feel like saying. And whenever we meet, we do that at the beginning. And over time, what's happened with doing the whiffle is that then we've got kind of more used to just being whatever ourself is currently being. Mm. Yeah. Like if, you know, whatever we're worried, if we're worried about something, if we're excited about something, if we're actually feeling really guilty about something, but just whatever it is, because we recognize that if we don't get it out and, you know, in front of each other, like put it out there in front of each other, then one of us could easily react to something and maybe take it personally, but wonder, oh, what else is going on? Mm-hmm. And so we just know. Mm. And then what I noticed is I did this thing, somewhere I was in a big group of people. Where was it? End of a workshop, that's right. And I, so there was no one else around. Actually, there had been some people around. It was at the Chakra Community Launch. And someone gave Rachel a positive bit of feedback. And Rachel, if you're listening, I'm using this to good effect.
I'm sure she gives consent.
Giving Rachel good feedback. And Rachel just deflected the feedback a bit and kind of gave the person who gave it a compliment. And I stepped in in an unwanted way and went, I just said something like kind of quite abruptly, like, nah, Rachel, that was you.
Yeah,
go you, or something like that, like in my kind of way. And then as soon as I'd said it, I thought, I don't know how that landed.
Mm.
And so I just, as soon as the other people moved away, and I went up to Rachel and said, I'm sorry if that was unnecessarily abrupt and also just uncalled for. And then, she was able to say what she said and we were all good.
Mm.
But in the past, in other relationships, I would have just wondered.
Right.
Yeah,
whereas
yeah.
because we've made it just okay, just to, we're going to make mistakes. We're going to be imperfect.
Yeah. Mm.
Therefore, it's more okay just to raise it. So I know, so coming back to the two of you.
Yeah.
That's, I guess, the two of you mean that I sometimes think of me and Rachel because it's some of, and it's like prevention, isn't it?
Mm.
It's like the things that we can do in the environments to actually change what happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just also want to put out there, I mean, you're talking to the two of us, but, you know, this is really applicable to any situation.
Yeah,
and
true.
I really love the idea of normalizing. Just even if you're thinking about it, say it, right? Mm. And normalizing that within your friendships, within your professional relationships, because it just makes things so much easier. So I think that we should start hashtag wiffle.
Yeah.
And everyone should start wiffling with their friends.
What I feel like saying.
What I feel like saying, yeah.
Yeah. And I want to, yes, come back to the question that you were asking, like in terms of how to raise the thing, because can I just put something out there as a starting few words and then just see what they sound like to the two of you and then kind of come up with something better.
Yeah.
Like, what if it was something like, oh, hey, I just wanted to catch up about that thing we were talking about yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Like, does that sound like an all right lead-in?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. As opposed to like, hey, we need to talk.
Yeah.
When people say that and you're no, oh my god.
What's happened? Mum, if you're listening, stop saying that. It freaks me out every time.
Every time.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's what one of the things that comes up when people are talking about bystander intervention too or is the tone.
Yeah.
Mm.
Hey, because our tone can completely change the words that we're using, eh? Mm. And so anyway, that
I like to take us back to when we had our last workshop and I really felt kind of like a eureka moment in talking about the oh shit moment. And I'd really like, especially for, because it happened to me having an oh shit moment, and I'd really like Mel to talk about what that is because I feel that a lot of people in the industry would understand
would
this
have,
and have yeah and would have
would recognize that
what is an oh shit moment, Mel?
What is it?
Right. So what when I use the oh shit moment is to refer to something specific. So let's just say I might just say K.
Mm.
If a friend in music world, art worlds, was telling you about something that had happened to them, then it's how K responds to their friend. And as their friend is talking about the person who's harmed them, K knows this person. Mm. And so it's really different when someone in our own world and community tells us about harm from a stranger. Mm. Yeah?
Yeah.
Like, obviously, we hate that someone's hurt them. And when it's, though, with an own community, this is where I think of the oh shit moment. And the oh shit moment could be a whole bunch of things from internally going, say, K being the one told, K might be going, what? That person? I've never seen anything, heard anything. So kind of, just almost not confusion, but like, what is going on?
Yeah.
Or Kay might have had something happen themselves or have seen some other perhaps dodgy behavior. And so it's like all of that is now as part of the oh shit moment. Or also, I hope this is all right. You kind of, I'm just trying to use your name, Kay, just to kind of locate it rather than talk about person and person and person. Mm. But Or maybe, yeah, Kay or someone close to Kay is going to be doing something, some sort of project with that person tomorrow, next week.
Right.
And so, yeah, so many things can be in the oh shit moment. And as Kay, you said in the workshop, it's sure not a moment. It can go on and on. And what I think I really want to emphasize is I do not think that if any of you recognize that you've had an oh shit moment, that it's wrong or you've done something wrong or you're not good enough or something. It's a very natural, understandable reaction when it's harm done to someone in our family or our community. It just brings up very intensely and profoundly all these feelings and questions.
Mm. That can be on opposite ends of the spectrum.
Yes.
And we are humans and duality is a thing. Yes. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Totally. Cool.
Kia ora.
Mel, is there anything before we move on to our classic quickfire round, is there anything else that you wanted to say or to offer? We've spoken about a lot of incredible things today, and thank you so much for your time and for being here with us. Is there anything else that you want people to know or that you want to add? We'll have a time after this for you to tell people where to find you, but if there's anything else you wanted to contribute to the conversation.
Yeah. There is one more, or two things, actually.
Please, go on.
But, the first is I want to come back to the question you asked about when someone has the fear of saying something, talking. And I guess I just want to say first, in terms of like getting through that fear in order to say something, just to really acknowledge that that the fear can be just so big, huge, that it's hard to even think clearly.
Mm.
And so I think for some people anyway, it's actually going down the track of, in some situations I can think of talking to people, it's like, okay, if you were to say something, what might happen?
Mm.
Or if you were to do this, it's like trying on different things.
Mm.
Or have you already talked to someone about this? Just because often, someone might have, and then they've had a reaction to it, which has actually increased the fear.
So,
I just wanted to emphasize sometimes I think it's important to kind of, ideally get through to the other side of the fear and also just spend whatever time is needed looking at it.
Yep.
Looking at what's driving it, in order to.
Totally. Thank you.
And my second question was, so both you, Izzy, and Kay, tonight have mentioned things that I've said that I think I should already have thought of that because that's already an important point. So I'm so glad you're in the room with me so that you brought them up. Is there anything else that I've missed that, in our chats that's come up?
Do you mean in our chat here now or in the...
Any other chats that we've had?
No, well, you know what?
So.
I don't think you've missed anything. Mm. I think we've run out of time. No. Like in the past.
Yeah.
And that's because we're talking and getting in depth and really getting to the nuances of things or, really kind of exploring sides. So I don't think you've missed but anything. You've listened to our podcast. We're here. We're your number one fans. Yeah. Like, and
totally. I'm your number one fan.
No, we're yours.
We're yours.
Kōrero Q.
Kōrero Q.
Just for you. So Kōrero Q, if you're just tuning in, is a quick fire round of just a few light questions just to
end on a good note.
Yeah. And casual it back down. So first question, Mel. What is the best gig, concert, or performance you've ever been to and why?
Oh, so many. Okay. I'm gonna go with the one that came to mind, even though the significance of it came later. Mm-hmm. It was Pacifica mm-hmm. in Tāmaki a few years ago. Rore was small enough to be on my shoulders. Mm. And Nija Mystic were on the stage.
Oh, yes.
Mm. And so Nija Mystic went to the same school as some people in Rore's family. I knew some people at school at the same kind of time. So yep. it was very, you know, like, because I was, you know, obviously living in Tāmaki around that time. And anyway, there were, so me and Rore, well, me dancing, Rore on top, therefore dancing. And then we got home and he wanted to be listening more to them. He didn't know the words to ask for it.
Yeah.
But he wanted more. And so I think that was either the first or one of the first CD or, you know, that I bought him. And then Nijin Mystic became his go-to to dance in the living room.
Oh, cool.
And so, and then he became a dancer.
Yeah.
And it's not, I credit Nijin Mystic with that, but it's that, that it's all linked in. Yeah. And so then that's why I...
Oh, what a beautiful answer.
You're
so wholesome.
Yeah,
now.
You are.
You're so wholesome.
With your love for yourself. You just hear, I'm quite, yeah. Aw, I don't know what to
say. Rory knows how much of an incredible mother he has. Yeah. So.
Wow.
Okay, next question. Yeah, before we get all teary-eyed here, let's move on to the next question. If you weren't the Chapra, what would you do?
Oh my gosh, because, okay, there is only one other
good
thing.
Are you going to say mother? Because we already know.
No, it's where Rachel and I met a few years ago.
Yeah. Mm.
Was at a conference and she was giving the keynote and it was a prevention of sexual harm conference. And the thing that we would love to spend even more time in our lives on than we currently do is the prevention of child sexual abuse within families and anywhere children and young people are. Mm-hmm. That is our, yeah. Otherwise, I am very happy in my role as Chapra.
Yeah. Oh.
We need to all be doing better with our lives. Yeah, that's all I have to say.
All right.
No, I'm just kidding. Right. I'm just kidding.
Third question. Do you have any hidden talents?
Oh, well, it's not a talent.
Okay. We put this down because I was like, I bet
she's got one.
I bet Mel does, and it's going to be one that I would have never thought.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. I'll see. Because I don't. I wouldn't describe it as a talent, but it is something that's really, really important to me.
Okay.
I do karate. Yeah.
Oh no! Yes. That's a talent.
Oh my God, that's amazing. Oh, I love that.
Oh, are you like full black belt? Like the whole?
Yeah.
Do you teach?
Yes.
Do you want to plug your dojo?
It's Sado, and the dojo is Lower Hut.
Oh my gosh!
Wow. I'm going to Lower Hutt.
Should we do team bonding and learn karate?
Okay, I was going to say that because my brother and my mum and stepdad, they do family karate classes down at the mosque in Kilburnie.
Oh, really?
And yes, that's why I was asking what. I was like, oh, I wonder.
Oh, because I'm so close because I'm just on the hill above
there. Yeah.
I don't know if you'll be able to keep up though because I do have a yellow tip in Taekwondo from like 6 years ago.
Yeah. You know what?
By the way, yellow tip is like a half point before you actually get to a coloured belt for no one. So I didn't even make it to like level one.
You got a belt though. You got a belt. Yeah.
So.
I'd wrestling, so.
Oh,
maybe
this is how we're going to settle all agreements from now on.
It's actually kind of funny because we were talking before. I'm quite short and Izzy isn't. Wrestling makes no. Izzy's really tall and elegant, and I'm not.
Oh,
sure. But just a tangent away from Kōrero Q. Wrestling, you know, short is good for that.
Yeah,
whereas
yeah.
you know, so maybe I don't know where I was going with that, but you know, low center of gravity. That's the only reason why I was good at it.
It's and taekwondo shortness, kicks, long legs.
So we're.
Yeah, you're doing
well. We're onto it. Okay, final question of the longest Kōrero Q that we've done is favourite way to wind down the end of a long day?
Ah, okay, favouritest way, if I'm not at the dojo, would be when, say, Rory's got, if he's not like with me in person showing me a clip or something, you know, a new set, it would be then. He's living wherever he's living and or over wherever he's traveling in the world, but he's got a new set and I put on there's Instagram and there he is.
Can see.
That would be my favourite. I can't always control that, of course, but when it does happen, it's a beautiful thing.
Oh, that is beautiful. Well, wow. Thank you all for listening to this episode of Awkward Talks with the incredibly wholesome, amazing yes. mum that could also kick your ass yeah. of a chakra, Mel. Mel, thank you so much for being here with us. It's truly been amazing. Like, our whole journey with you has been fantastic, and I'm just looking forward to more of it because, yeah, we love you and the way that you communicate and the way that you show up in a space and make people feel comfortable and make us feel comfortable and welcome. So you are a totally true asset to the music community.
All right. And I don't say your names without saying, I say Kay and Izzy. I just love them so much and they're so wonderful. And then I keep on saying whatever my point was about saying your names.
That's so sweet. Thank you. How can people get in touch with you and find out more about your work?
Right. So Soundcheck Aotearoa, www.soundcheckaotearoa.co.nz. So there's a chakra page and link there. And my email address is chakra@soundcheckaotearoa.co.nz. And yeah, awesome. those two ways.
Great. We will put that in the show notes and also in our link tree in our Instagram bio. So if you guys want to get in contact with Mel, you can there. And also go check out the Soundcheck Aotearoa Instagram page and website because they have got more information about what they do and about what the chakra does. Yes, and we will make sure that information is all there for you. I also want to take the time now to give a big thank you to the Matrix team for making us look all crispy and swanky and also sound really crispy.
Thank you.
And as always, guys, you can find us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. And this episode, the short version of this episode, will be coming out on Wellington Access Radio as well. And you can also find this whole filmed version on YouTube if you want to chuck us up on your TV and just sit with us and have a bit of a corridor. Hey. That would be amazing. But yes, find us on Instagram @awkwardtalksnz for all of your awkward music industry discussions.
Hi. Ka mutu ngā kōrero. E mihi ana ke Mel mō tō awhi me whai kōrero o ngā kaupapa. It's been a wonderful eye-opening experience. This third time for us, I hope everyone here listening really takes something out of this. Thank you again.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.